and disturbing picture of emotional control over many years. Detective Inspector Kevin Hyland says the women were kept in appalling conditions.
Well, invisible handcuffs is a very good explanation of this, because people feel they're controlled, people feel they have to do as they're told, and yet, to the naked eye, there's no control whatsoever. It's all psychological, it might be through fear, and that's what we're looking at.
An independent inquiry is to be held into the Co-op Bank and its former chairman, Paul Flowers. Chancellor George Osborne has announced it after Mr. Flowers' arrest over what police call an ongoing drug supply investigation. His solicitor, Andy Hollis, has been mobbed by reporters in Leeds.
No, he's not being questioned. All the interviews will be finished today. How would you feel if you were in custody all night?
Well, was he able to tell the police anything that they wanted to know?
No. He's given an account of his actions. Statement will be forthcoming in due course.
Five of the six British people held in Russia following a protest against Arctic drilling have been released.
And hello. If you've just joined us, please stay tuned for our regularly scheduled program of Indigenous Talk Radio with the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
In case you didn't get the message, but I know you did, because I can see that there's already a drunker message. We have someone to sum it up for you, Miss Marsha P. Johnson.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I am stay-at-home for you called self.
Oh, what?
No!
You can count your karma if nirvana is your goal. You can shake and you can rattle. You can rock and roll. You can be a Clark Kent or a Lois or an Alice down a hole. You can be a vampire on a mountain with the heart of stone black hole. You can be a leather angel on a sleek black holly bike, or a redhead screaming faggot, or a dazzling giant. You can lock yourself in a closet in a binding soul, but it really doesn't matter if you ain't got a soul.
Angry Indian Radio. You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Stand up and fight for Indigenous rights.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is Indian land! Indian land! Indian land! Indian land! You guys have no jurisdiction here.
Listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Real talk for the fourth world.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Who are you? You don't know. Don't tell me Negro. That's nothing. What were you before the white man named you a Negro? And where were you? And what did you have? What was yours? And how did he take it? What gun did you see? Where is your history? How did the man wipe out your history? How did the man, what did the man do to make you as dumb as you are right now?
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
All Indians, all over land, all saying the same thing. This is our homeland. This is our birthright. They don't want any white man comes in here and tell us that you have to divide this up this way or that way. white man doesn't own this land. Just because he has a gun, he said, I took your land.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Transmitting from within the occupied Aboriginal territories of North America to the people of the Fourth World and all ships at sea. This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Internet radio for the smart of the original.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Radio.
This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
You know, there must be an awful lot of people in this world who need love and affection, because the signs of this are all around us. For example, I heard not too long ago that some 40 million women watch the soap opera programs every day. I don't know whether this figure is true. I sort of question all of these figures. But at least there's a lot of women that watch these regularly, sort of absorbing love through osmosis. And men read an awful lot of sexy magazines. Men, of course, wouldn't dare read a love story. Men have to read sexy magazines. But at the basis of this, what we're all searching for, I think, is someone to love and someone who loves us.
Internet radio for smart of the
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Transmitting to the people of the Fourth World from within occupied North America. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Salutan and peace to all original human beings resident on the physical plane. I'm your host, Angry Indian. Editor-in-Chief of the Aboriginal Press News Service, blogging to the Fourth World from aboriginalnewswire.tumblr.com and aboriginalpress.wordpress.com and ang-newswire.blogspot.com. Thank you for tuning in to Indigenous news, thought, and analyses concerning the issues that matter to original peoples and other communities across the world living under imperial, theological, racist, neoclassist, neocolonialist, neoliberal, neofascist, and neo-misogynist control. I wish to welcome you all to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome along. I wish peace to the gods and earths and love and solidarity to the entire original family in a time of strife and struggle. I'm your host, Angry Indian, and I'm here with our executive producer and engineer, Guadalupe Morales. And we're going to get into a subject that, you know, we don't really talk about too much, but we're going to, because not too many people talk about it. That's the point. We're going to talk about transphobia. I had to educate myself a lot, you know, about this. I know people who are transgendered. I've known people before they transitioned. You know, I mean, I deal with a lot of different folks, man. I have a very wide circle, but, you know, we never really talk about what goes on with them. And because this is becoming an issue, you know, it's being talked about, no one's really talking about, you know, the discrimination and really the form of weird misogyny that they deal with. Now, some of you are, you know, might be hip to this. You know, there's been, you know, quite a few acts of violence against transgender people. And for those of us who are Native, who are cognizant of our two-spirit tradition, and those of us who are Afrocentric and are cognizant of our gender traditions, we know that in Vodun and most of the other traditional African spiritual traditions, many of the deities are of both genders. So it was not uncommon, especially in the case of Vodun, as is practiced in West Africa, as it is practiced in Haiti, as it is practiced in some Gullah communities along the Sea Islands. I mean, no one makes a big shout out about this, but many of our root people, of our priests, our priestesses, are different. I'm not going to say gay or, you know, a lesbian or homosexual, because really, when we take into account what those terms, not what they mean, but the connotations that come along with those terms, they come along with colonialism, don't they? They come along with colonialism. You know, when we look at Pizarro, and what he did as he was, you know, conquering his areas of the Americas. He killed all of the two-spirit people he ran into. He killed all of the, as we would call it today, gay people. All of the different people. And you know, when we talk about language, it gets really crazy. You know, especially nowadays. They're adding more and more words to the dictionary now. What used to be slang is now considered actual language. I'm not saying the languages shouldn't grow and shouldn't change, but you know, anybody that speaks another language knows English is really on the bottom in terms of language. You know, it doesn't really even stick to its own rules. Of which rules that, you know, I mean, linguistically, English is really a nothing language. It is. It is. The only reason anybody speaks it at all, I mean, it has no feeling, it has no soul. The only reason anybody speaks it at all is because of colonialism. It's the only reason. If it wasn't for the British Navy, nobody would give a damn about the English language. Especially in the Americas. I mean, Spanish, if you want to talk about European languages, really took hold and is the main language. And it's becoming, in the United States and even Canada to some degree, it's becoming a language you're going to have to know. So, you know, is this good? Is it bad? I mean, Spanish itself, when we're dealing with Spanish-speaking Indians, is not their first language either. You know, but it has more goddamn feeling. It has more to it than English. I mean, the German that a lot of English comes from, there's more expressions in German than there are in English. But anyway, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about differences. And I'm talking about how we articulate these differences. And when we talk about racism, when we talk about Renisha McBride, and I'm not trying to necessarily tie this into the civil rights movement, because I know somebody out there is about to, you know, they're getting hot right now because I just said that. Well, ease up, brother and sister. You know, just hold on for a moment. We all deal with oppression, but there are levels to oppression. If we're dealing with a society that has hierarchies, why wouldn't the oppression also go along a pecking order? Of course it would. Now, I'm not saying that black people suffer more than anybody else. I mean, we hear that, and it's true in many aspects. But when you deal with indigenous people, it kind of isn't true. But then we talk about the racism against African people within the indigenous world, within the Indian country, especially in the United States. Well, then it does apply. There are variants to this. But right now, you know, let me just say it this way. Trans people are in the news right now, for better or for worse. A lot of it is piggybacking off of the drag queen bit, you know, because we've had some movies. You know, there's been RuPaul, right? She's all over the place. So, you know, there's been more talk, and people are coming out earlier. And because of technology, surgery, and the internet, things are happening at a faster pace. Now, I'm not making a judgment call, and neither should you. We don't know why people necessarily make these choices, and this is why we're going to talk to somebody about that. But what I want to talk about right now, you know, in terms of, you know, my space here, is discrimination. You know, there's been a lot of people, you know, harmed for being transgender, for being different. You know, if you want to say two-spirited, then do that. If you want to say trans, then say that. You know, I'm looking at these human beings who, for whatever reason, you know, someone decided to take them out, right? Decided to remove them from the planet, to take everything that they had because they felt nervous. You know, it's like when you see the Klan out here, you know, or when you see Klan-inspired comments on the internet, on the social webs. This is fear. Yes, it's hate. Yeah, there's anger, sure. But with the bottom line of it is fear. Now, those of you who have been listening to the show for quite a while know I'm a fan of deconstruction. I'm a fan of French philosophy in general. And Jacques Derrida has been a great inspiration to me, as has Jean-Paul Sartre. And, Derrida put it very, very clearly. In the West, everything is an either-or. It's either good or it's bad. It's up or it's down. Is black or is white. It's always one or the other of an extreme opposite. Of course, the rest of the world doesn't function this way. Outside of Western Europe, you know, people do not necessarily think this way. I mean, like, let's just say Tibet for one good indigenous example. because, you know, people don't give a damn about Indians in the Americas. So we'll talk about Tibet because, you know, people with money care about Tibet. They really won't do anything about the situation, but they care about Tibet. They like the Dalai Lama, they feel good, and they go and they get their beads blessed, and he shows up into their towns. Okay. Tibetans see life and death and then something in between. And it really frustrates, you know, researchers when they talk to them about the Yeti or when they talk to them about flying monks or, you know, whatever. You know, any of these fantastic things, you know, Shangri-La, right, Shambhala, you know, any of it. Now, to the Westerner, he's completely confused, he or she. But to the Tibetan, they're making perfect sense. You know, it could be one of the three. You know, it's just like I was talking about German earlier. You know, anybody who speaks German is familiar with it. You have male, female, and neuter. Dutch, which German has a relation to, you know, same thing, male, female, neuter. And, you know, English, you can call a group of women guys and it's totally acceptable. You know, you try that in Spanish, you just cause offense, especially if you're going to do it in Castilian. You just cause serious offense. You can't do that in any other language that I'm aware of. So, you know, we have to be cognizant on how words matter, how words hurt, and how words frame political environments, on how they inform social environments, how it informs social acceptance. And I suppose what I'm trying to say is, I am rambling, but, you know, a lot of these alphabet soup acronyms and these new terms that are coming out to explain gender and sexuality, I'm just telling you as a black Indian, I think you're making a mistake. I think you're making a mistake by creating more of these terms, and I think you're creating a mistake by hanging on to them. Now, in terms of clinical, you know, explanations, I think homosexual makes perfect sense. Do I think people should be identified as homosexuals outside of a descriptive? No, I don't think so. Because it comes along with a certain connotation that really doesn't have anything to do with that individual, does it? And I know somebody's probably going to have a problem with what I'm saying. I mean, I still get into long, drawn-out discussions with my friends over the term queer. I'm sorry, my age group, queer is unacceptable. I don't like it. It's like nigger. I don't accept that either. I don't like it. But I'm going to tell you something, because I was part of those, you know, political debates when white gays anyway, who I suppose make up the gay movement because they don't really think about people of color when they have these decisions. And I don't remember anybody black really being in those arguments. I remember, you know, like being in some of these things when it came up, because, you know, usually when you're working on some kind of, you know, political thing, people want to bring in their own particular issue. So they wanted to bring in queer. They wanted to bring in queer as an identification for what was then being argued in terms of, you know, GBLT, and then they wanted Q, and you know, it was just a lot of confusion instead of just, you know, like black folks used to do. You're in the life. You like to do this, you like to do that, you're in the life. And that's it, you know. It wasn't confusing. It wasn't, you know, a headache. You know, Indian people, same thing. He likes that. She likes this. That's it. You don't tell another person what to do. You don't tell another person how to live their life because you only got one. You dig? So, you know, we have a guest coming on. So we're going to talk about transgendered issues. We're going to talk about gender issues. We're going to talk about society. You know, we're going to talk about a few things. But, you know, I just wanted to get it in your head let this trickle down in your ear before we move into that, you know, discrimination is a bitch, man. And when we really want to understand how discrimination works in a society, you know, it's really easy to look at women and say, okay, well, women are being dogged out. Well, we already know this. But imagine if you were male and then, you know, You transitioned into physically living as a woman. And here it is, you had male privilege all this time. You know, what's going on through your mind? You know, what insights might you have in terms of how women are treated and why men do what they do? Why the balance is out of balance? You dig what I'm saying? So, you know, as usual, you know, with all of our discussions on this show, you know, don't have any expectations. Have an open mind. Come with an empty cup of tea. And, you know, let's get into discrimination on another level. Because we talk about black and white and Indian and what have you here quite a bit. Yeah, so hang around. I think it's going to be a pretty good discussion. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. I'm the Angry Indian, and you're listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. So please stay tuned.
Eat it up. It's your bacon ration for the week, so you may as well enjoy it. Sorry about the toast. I don't know how that happened. There wasn't even enough pressure in here to light the stove, let alone burn a piece of bread. Oh, no, don't read the paper while you're eating. You know it always gives you indigestion. Do you know I spent 2.5 hours in the queues yesterday, and all I came back with was 3 sausages and 2 pounds of artichokes? The vegetable queue got so political that they had 3 governments all in power at the same time by the time I got to the front. I don't know which is worse, the grumbling in the queues or the rudeness of the tradespeople. I'm sure I don't know what's happening to people these days. And what you're going to have for your supper tonight, I don't know. You'll just have to have what's not there, that's all. Now hurry, dear, or you'll be late. And don't get wet. And don't worry. And don't forget about Bill.
Don't let the colonial occupation blues get you down. Listen to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The podcast for Intelligent Aboriginal.
I'm going to stand until I can't stand no more if I have to stand by myself.
The American people are the last people to wake up.
Prisons are becoming an integral part of the U.S. economy.
People of color organize critical thinking, strategic work, and direct action for social, racial, gender, and economic justice.
A world run by a handful of greedy bankers and CEOs who nobody elected can't possibly last.
People of color organize features intersections of race, politics, feminism, movement, class, internationalism, and theory.
This is about the Black Panthers. This is about the American Indian movement. This is about all of us.
Visit us online at peopleofcolororganize.com. Follow us on Twitter at POCorganize and Facebook at facebook.com/peopleofcolororganize. You can also find us on Tumblr at peopleofcolor.tumblr.com.
We're organizing against what we term genocide.
Every day, one more Aboriginal person will test positive for HIV. Some will be rejected by their family, friends, and community. They will live in isolation, their voices no longer heard. HIV/AIDS stigma and discrimination denies our people the right to protect their future. You can make a difference. Be their voice. End HIV/AIDS stigma and discrimination. Get information from your community health center or nursing station, or visit www.caan.ca.
I'm Carol Gordon. Traditionally, healthcare, including reproductive health, was women's business and respected as such. Reclaim your healthcare choices by keeping yourself informed and sharing information with your relatives. Inform yourself about Plan B, known as the morning after pill. Plan B will protect you from becoming pregnant after a sexual assault or unprotected sex if taken within 72 hours. Make sure your local Indian Health Service facility carries Plan B. It does not require a prescription and should be provided upon request. It's your right. For more information, call your local healthcare facility. This message is brought to you by a Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center.
I'm Dick Gregory with PETA. Martin Luther King Jr. taught me the fight against oppression is never an easy one. It's even harder if you have no voice. For animals held captive in circuses, life consists of cramped cages, shackles, and daily beatings. There is no escape. They cannot demand their freedom. Images like these bring only one word to my mind, slavery. Be an abolitionist for the animals. Please don't go to circuses. For more information, contact PETA.
757-622-PETA.
Now that America has a black president, is this proof that racism is a thing of the past?
Well, I think white men were 100% of the people that wrote the Constitution, 100% of the people who signed the Declaration of Independence, 100% of the people who died at Gettysburg and Vicksburg, probably close to 100% of the people who died at Normandy. This has been a country built basically by white folks in this country who were 90% of the entire nation. I think they ought to do. They ought to defend the legitimate rights of white working class folks who are the victims of discrimination.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal media. The anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
This is APNS Public Radio.
The opinions expressed in dispatches represent the analysis of the participating editors and may not necessarily reflect the group positions of the ANG or its public news wires.
This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome back. There's a lot of talk that's been flying around about what it is to be transgendered, what it isn't. What is a drag queen? What isn't a drag queen? You know, there's a lot of confusion out there. And the alphabet soup of acronyms that has come about recently, you don't use hermaphrodite anymore. It's intersex, I believe. You're not straight anymore. You're cis, right? It's confusing. And for Native people, we've never really had a problem with this. I mean, we tried to adapt in the 21st century by pretty much using the two-spirit model as the model, as an ideal for identifying at least with non-natives. And this ranges from people who are what would be identified in the white world as transgendered or transsexual or intersexed, whatever it is. You identify as who you are, and your family identifies you as who you are. And, that's just the way it's always been. Now, I want to point this out, before we go into in terms of the historical angle for indigenous people. When they were coming through South America, the conquistadores, they would take two-spirited people, men dressed as women, women dressed as men, right, who were living and honoring those roles, or even the special role that is held for special people in indigenous, ways of thought within indigenous philosophies. They would take them, because Balboa did this, and they would push them all into, a pile, a huddle, and they would turn their dogs on them, because the church didn't want this, because it was wrong. Because the way that the European understands things, this was wrong. So his way of dealing with that was to kill these people, to have them mangled by dogs in front of their people, in front of their families, in front of their people. The people who love them, to give them a lesson. We're not going to allow this. That we're not going to allow this. That you're going to have to live the way we tell you to live. So we're in the 21st century now, and, surgery has made a lot of things possible, and pop culture has made things more accessible and more acceptable. But, do we really understand what's going on? And we speak to a lot of experts, but we're not really actually talking to people who live this life. So we're speaking now with Sophia from Toronto, Canada. She is a Twitter activist. You can check her out at Sophia Photos. That's one word on Twitter. And see, what she's talking about out there in terms of being trans, in terms of, being able to get along with people who do not really understand and fully accept, what this is. It's a part of the human dynamic. It's a part of the human fabric. It's always been there. It's always been there. Yeah, and it's pretty ridiculous that we're in the 21st century and this is really still an issue. The idea that someone's orientation, their sexual orientation, their gender identification, but we also have to look at the culture itself and, where these paradigms are and, whether they're human or whether they're not. So we're going to jump right into this now. Sophia, welcome to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Hi, thank you for having me here. I'm very excited to talk to you.
All right, so representing Toronto, Canada, you know, there's a lot of questions we have there. You know, what is the climate, socially, politically, theologically even, in Toronto, Canada, for the trans community?
Well, in all honesty, talking to a lot of different trans people and, you know, people of different gender variances around the world, I'd have to say I'm pretty fortunate that I live in Toronto, that I was born here, that I can access the healthcare that I have. I feel very privileged, but at the same time, I also feel it really shouldn't be a privilege. It should be a standard right that people have an access to medical transition and the sort of healthcare that I have access to. Overall, I'm a visible trans woman. And I can go about my day, for the most part, go out on the bus, buy groceries, and people leave me alone at this point. Very different now than when I say first started transitioning. But overall, I'm going to say that Toronto is decent, but obviously Toronto still has a lot of problems. There's a lot of neighborhoods I can't go to. But to leave the downtown core, I definitely feel unsafe. So, you know, it's like any other city, really, right? There's certain parts that are good, certain parts that are bad.
Well, there's an understanding in the lower 48 that Canada has a much more positive and tolerant attitude towards trans people. How true is that?
I think it's true to some extent. Like, you know, there's definitely it's a safer city than, say, a lot of cities in the U.S. or in Latin America or elsewhere. By no means is it perfect, but I definitely feel safe walking about my city. But at the same time, say in the last year since I've come out as trans, I've been physically assaulted on the streets by random people twice. So I can't really say that it's a safe city. And then, of course, you know my mayor, Rob Ford. So the city is obviously a little, it's pretty far right at the end of the day. I think a lot of people have this misconception in Canada as a safe harbor free for racism and homophobia and transphobia. And really, that's just not the truth. Canada just has a really good PR version going, but when you're actually a minority in Toronto, you do face, you know, prejudice every single day of your life, and that's just the reality, I would say.
Is the larger gay, lesbian community, you know, supportive of the trans community in Canada, like when it comes to discrimination in changing rooms, restrooms, other facilities, access to other services that that all Canadians should have access to?
Well, to be perfectly honest with you, I don't necessarily find there's a lot of solidarity with the lesbian gay community. I don't think they really represent our voices very well. I think there's a lot of ostracization. Even in Toronto, in the Village, which is a part of town which is considered kind of the gay neighborhood, a lot of bars won't allow trans people to enter the bar. So you get carded at the door because you're 21 and you're presenting as a male, but your ID says female, they won't let you in the bar. So there's definitely a lot of discrimination going on in that extent. But at the same time, in the last year, Ontario has passed a lot of laws. I'm very fortunate as someone who lives anywhere in the world, is that in Ontario, it's illegal to discriminate against trans people, which in a lot of places in the world, in Canada and the U.S., it's perfectly legal to discriminate against a trans person. The Toronto School Board has also made strides in the past, say, 18 months to be more trans inclusive to trans students. So, say, a trans girl in high school now can play on the girls' softball team or the basketball team, which before was a serious issue, also when it comes down to bathrooms. So I do think Toronto is a fairly inclusive city, but I definitely think we have a long way to go still.
All right, yeah, so a lot of people are focused on the Tom Ford scandal and his drug use. How is the issue going right now in terms of support for trans people who may be self-medicating and don't really have access to not just services, but to people who can get them to those services and help them, you know, cope with their issues?
I tend to think self-medicating is more a problem outside of Canada. I actually don't know any trans people in Canada who self-medicate. It seems to be more of a problem in the UK and in the US and in, say, South America, where it's much more rigid. traditionally, like, until very recently, it was this idea that you had to go through the gender clinic and you had to spend years and years proving that we were really trans before they would give you medication. For example, even in the gender clinic here in Toronto, if you're a trans youth, they still believe in reparative therapy and they think that they're going to be able to cure you of trans, and that will be their first attempt. Once you're an adult, they kind of consider you a lost cause, and then we'll just kind of give you your meds. I was fortunate that I was able to find a family doctor and go through an endocrinologist and be able to just get my medication. Things are changing, unfortunately not internationally. Traditionally, it was you had to do, like, say, a real life test, where as a trans woman, I would have to live my life as a woman, presenting as a woman, that sort of stuff, gauged by societal norms, before I could even start hormones. That isn't so much the case anymore. Just for example, there last month, a new gender clinic opened up for trans kids at Sick Kids of Hospital in Toronto. So I definitely think there are things changing. And to be honest, I don't know anyone in Canada who is taking hormones on the black market. But definitely, probably half the trans people I know in the U.S. are buying hormones on the black market because they simply can't afford the doctors. There's a lot of gatekeeping. There's a lot of, well, you have to prove to me you're trans before I'm going to give you these hormones kind of thing.
Yeah, well, okay, now that you mention that, now that you've gone in that direction, that leads into my next question, which is plastic surgery, if we still use that term, or body modification, if that's the more polite term nowadays. We have a lot of people who are getting backroom work done in terms of their buttocks, cheek fill-ins, you know, for higher cheekbones, of course, breast implants. And there was at least two of these people, I believe they were both based in, well, maybe one in California, one in Miami, who basically went around the country performing these backroom body augmentations. Do you see that in Canada? And even if you do or not, you know, what does this say to you? As a trans woman, in terms of the straight world, who used to reject large buttocks, used to reject high cheekbones, used to reject, you know, these physical attributes, but now people are risking their lives because they can't afford the proper medical procedure, and they're in their desperation. Not just in terms of gender, but just in terms of beauty itself and how that is morphing now because of changes in culture in the Americas. How do you see that as someone who is, you know, making a change towards, I don't want to say correcting because I don't think that's the right term or proper term, but into being more in line with who you are spiritually, as opposed to these folks who, in some ways, maybe are trying to fit themselves into a trend?
Okay, well, that's definitely a multifaceted question, so I'm going to try and answer that in parts, if you don't mind.
Sure.
I definitely see, you definitely have a situation, especially in the States, like here where I live, and in the province I live, gender reassignment surgery is covered by the government. So they don't cover, say, if I want breast implants, but I need to take hormones for at least 2 years before I see how my breasts are going to grow. And there's really no idea how large my breasts will grow in those 2 years. So that's something that I'm not really thinking about because I only started hormones 9 months ago. I do have the option for surgery here, which is covered by the government. And that includes either an oophorectomy where they remove testicles, or, you know, like vaginal reconstruction where they use the penis and the testicles to create a vagina. Now, a lot of people see this as very superficial, but what they don't kind of understand is that, well, as long as I have my testicles, my body is producing testosterone, which means I have to take a blocker. And what I take is Sepraterm, which is actually a prostate cancer medication. So when it comes down to it, I don't really have a lot of dysphoria around my genitals. My transition is more about just me living my life as I want to live. So if I consider surgery, I'm probably leaning towards an oophorectomy. I'm doing so because, well, this is a surgery that's covered by healthcare. It's really quick. There's not really a lot of recovery. And that means once I have the surgery, I no longer have to take medication that is really toxic to my liver for the rest of my life. So it's not really about me sitting here saying, oh, I'm really feeling messed up about my genitals. It's about me looking at it logically and saying, okay, well, I can do this, or I can take these pills that are toxic to my liver for the next 50 years of my life, or who knows how long I live, right? It could be next year or whatever. When it comes to silicone injections, you also brought up, I don't honestly find many trans people are doing silicone injections. It's expensive. Most trans people I know don't have any money. It's really rare, and also it is really dangerous. And I think it's unfortunate because a lot of trans women, I guess what we're talking about, because I don't really know a lot of trans men or non-binary people who are getting silicone injections, is that they fall into these kind of tropes of Western society of like, well, a woman has to have big breasts, woman has to have big butt, and this is what a woman should look like, and then they feel pressure to look like this, otherwise they're kind of ostracized or whatever. Or maybe perhaps they're doing sex work and have to feel, they feel a role to, you know, sort of meet a client's goal. At the end of the day, it's like, I don't really think we, as trans people or even cis people, really need to worry so much about fulfilling these kind of societal norms. I'm a woman regardless of, you know, if I still have my facial hair, if I don't have breasts, if I have a penis. So I worry about a lot of these silicone injections because, one, they're dangerous, and two, it's like, well, are we just prescribing to a lot of the norms about what we think a woman should be, which is really toxic, not just for trans women, but cis women.
Okay, so, you know, that's one of the things I suppose I wanted to ask you. You're a woman now, so how do you see the world now that you've transitioned and you're still on your personal path to being the full, you know, the full human being that you are? Now that you've kind of, you know, you're going through this, how do you see the relationship issues between men and women, the relationship issues between, say, in the gay and lesbian world, between two people of the same, you know, gender orientation? You know, now that you've gone through this, do you have any hindsight observations on what maybe a lot of us are not seeing in each other that maybe could lead to a larger discussion?
How do I answer that without writing a book? I guess, you know, like before I came out as trans, I was, you know, read as a 6-foot tall white guy. Obviously, I carried a lot of privilege that I never really realized I had. Like, not like I meant saying that I was a total jerk, but I really didn't realize like what being a 6-foot tall white guy in society carried me. And it was like instantaneously when I came out as trans and started living my life full time as a woman, I lost all that privilege. And all of a sudden I was stared at, I was mocked, I was denied service in stores, I was hassled on the bus. Everything about like what I kind of was used to was kind of gone. So there's definitely been this hole, my God, like women are really treated like shit in society, and I really became aware of how much prejudice there is in society that I really never saw before. Like, obviously, I knew it was there, but I never experienced it before. You know, it's like a tall white guy in Toronto. It's these things just never affected me. And then all of a sudden, it's like overnight, it was there. And it was kind of an adjustment to take to or whatever. And it was really weird. So it's definitely caused me to think a lot more about things. Realize how prejudiced society really is. I'm still processing a lot of these thoughts still, to be honest with you. I'm trying to understand it and kind of get my footing. I realize I have to interact with people differently now. People interact with me differently. I have to put on a sort of different sort of persona, I suppose, and engage with people differently and kind of follow the expectations. And sometimes it's like I really reject a lot of these norms. Like, for example, my voice is kind of shaky because I'm going through a process where I'm trying to change my voice right now, which is something I never really wanted to do. It's just my voice. But I felt so much discrimination because of my voice. For example, on the phone, everyone just calling me man, sir, that sort of stuff. And I'm like, oh, this is getting really painful. This is getting really hurtful. as much as I kind of resent the idea that I need to change my voice, society is kind of pressuring me to feel I need to change my voice. And so now I'm doing that, but I'm also, you know, it goes back and forth. It's a process. I'm used to my voice. It's this. It's kind of like going through puberty again. And a lot of people expect, like, okay, when I say I'm a trans woman, I'm a transition, that happens overnight. And that really isn't the truth. It takes years to kind of walk through this and figure out how I'm supposed to behave by societal norms. Change my voice, my body through hormones. I'm removing my facial hair. I'm unlearning, I'm relearning, I'm learning. So it's definitely a process, and it's not an easy process. So many people just expect it's going to be instantaneous, and it's like, no, I need to step back. And, you know, it takes me time to walk through this path. And as far as, I don't know, the gay community and, like, the lesbian community, I found a lot of hostility, to be perfectly honest with you. I'm really terrified of going to the gay village. Every time I've been to, like, say, a gay club or a gay bar, I'm sexually harassed, my crotch is grabbed, breasts are grabbed. I'm just really dehumanized. And there's definitely a... I just feel like a lot of people, in general, whether straight or gay or bi, have a lot of issues with trans people, and I don't really understand why we have so much prejudice in society towards people who say gender norms. Because it's not just, oh, I hate trans people. It's that when you transgress any gender norm, it becomes a problem. Even when, say, a man wears makeup, there's problems. Even if they're not what we deem trans or not, people really don't like when you mess with gender norms, or at least in my experience and where I've grown up.
We've had two cases, both in the military, actually. One in the UK and one in the United States, where you had the, at least he was billed at the time anyway, under Prince, when he was when shaking hands with Prince Charles, he was the number one British soldier who has come out as transgender, has gone through transition, and is not really welcome any longer at the regiment events as she was before. She still attends, but she can't really take part in the festivities. And then we have and I can't remember the names of either of these people, to be honest with you, and I apologize for that. The second one is the most recent U.S. Navy SEAL. A career U.S. Navy SEAL, actually, has come out as transgendered and said that, frankly, you know, when she did inform her SEAL team members about this, her team members, that, yeah, there was a bit of shock, but they got over it, and they've been supportive of her since. So we're talking about two of the toughest men alive who have now gone through what you've gone through and what you're continuing to learn from and experience. How does that make you feel when you see these sorts of stories reported, as opposed to the more negative, more sensationalistic, you know, frankly, pretty marginalizing articles that we generally see in the press? Even though we are noticing a change, things haven't changed that much. But when you see stories like this, you know, what goes through your mind?
Well, for starters, they're not men. So they were the toughest woman alive, because I really believe, like, a trans woman. Mm-hmm. She was assigned male at birth. She's not really a man. There's no point in my transition or any other trans woman's transition that we become women. It's that we are women, and that we were labeled wrong. And there's this sort of birth defect, essentially, that we are born with testicles, which put, you know, testosterone in our bodies and unfortunately force us through biology to become men. And I definitely think there is a lot going on with the media right now. Trans people are a really hot topic in the media these days. And I do see a lot of sensational articles, and they talk about, I honestly can't remember either their names as well. I've read both stories, and I apologize for that. There's just so much information to take in. But yeah, they've definitely gone through transitions. U.S. military does not respect trans people whatsoever. Not like the U.S. military respects anybody. They have their drones and whatnot. So believe me, when I talk about, say, on Twitter about you know, the U.S. military not giving Bradley Manning, or Chelsea Manning, I'm really sorry about that, giving her hormones. It's like, it's hard for me to really argue that, because it's like, okay, well, the U.S. military is not respecting trans people, but worldwide, the U.S. military isn't respecting anybody. You know what I mean? So, really, they're just kind of jerks. So, when you come down to it, it's, yeah, we get a lot of these stories, and the media loves that sensational story of, like, what we associate as, like, a really macho man, quote-unquote, here, in my fingers, becoming a woman, and they just really eat that stuff up, and it becomes really sensational, and you get a lot of stories, and what the media really picks up is those sensational stories, and the same, again, it's like, so much of the media is focused on trans kids now, and unfortunately, it's so often focused on white, middle-class trans kids who have the means to transition, who have family support, who have financial stability, who live in places where they can transition because they live in big cities or something like that. And we're so just like, how often do you really see an article in the paper anywhere in the UK and US and Canada, anywhere else in the world, really, that is focusing and talking positively about, say, a trans person of color? So I definitely do think there's a lot of problems in the movement for trans liberation, and that we're too caught up on focusing on sort of really stable, wealthy, white, binary trans people, people who have served military careers, because that's drama to the public, right? It's like, oh, this guy was tough and he had a beard kind of thing. But it's like, no, she was always a woman. And, you know, reality is a lot of trans women really do join the military. And that's often because when you're trans, you, especially in the generation I grew up in before, it was really negative. And there was a lot of shaming. There was a lot of you're sick, you're a freak, that sort of stuff. And so a lot of people, I think, move to this place where they kind of externalize this, like, hyper-masculinity. I'm like, okay, well, I feel like I'm a woman. So... and that's sick, so what I'm going to do to respond to that is become a really hyper-masculine man and go kill people off in another country. Know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, I know. No, you know, there's at least a couple of people of color that I can remember off the top of my head, and if anyone really gives a damn about African history, you know, in terms of at least African gay history. Martha P. Johnson was a famous drag queen. She was known throughout the East Coast, but her home was New York. And you had Sylvester, who I believe was holding things down in San Francisco. Sylvester was one of the early members of the Cockettes. And Martha P. Johnson, I can't remember the name of the group that she was involved with. But these were two black trans people. Before surgery, before hormones, before a lot of these things... who were in the white gay world, but making room and making sure that everybody was included. And I want to point out that even though they stood up for African rights in and out of the gay world, they wanted to make sure that everybody was included in the gay world at that time. And, you know, having said that, Sophia, do you have any advice or any words of encouragement for the other people out there who are listening to us internationally?
Oh, God, yeah. Like, you know, look at the civil rights movement. Not the civil rights movement. So much like the gay movement in the U.S. that came out of, like, the Stonewall riots in 69, right? It's like the women who led that were Miss Major and Sylvia Rivera. These were women of color. Like, everything in North America right now that we understand about gay rights, that we understand about trans rights, started by trans women of color that have been erased and whitewashed. Like, how many people have ever heard of Miss Major or Silvio Rivera?
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, it's like, it really disgusts me. It's like, these people were just, like, they were heroes to me, and they've been erased. And especially, like, you know, Silvio Rivera ended up homeless and just struggling with drugs because she was ostracized by that gay community that, at the end of the day, those Stonewall riots came to the point that, like, we have fucking gay rights. Sorry, I'm swearing. We have gay rights and trans liberation rights these days. And Miss Major, a black woman, a black trans woman, totally erased from, like, LGBT history. Why? Because she's black, trans, and she was a sex worker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's another prejudice because, actually, let me ask you that. If we, there is, I know that the trans people I know, many have been on the game, but there are also many who have not been on the game, who work primarily in the fashion industry where their transitioning was accepted, where they were allowed to be who they were. They always considered themselves fortunate. But what about those people who are not, say, in the art world, in the creative sphere, and they're simply not getting that kind of support, you know, the support that you're talking about, you know, to face up to the bias and discrimination that you're talking about?
Yeah, and that's something we really need to talk about. Like, at the end of the day, when you look at the stats, it's absolutely horrifying how many trans women are unemployed. You know, for example, like 41% of trans people attempt suicide. I think we're at about 40% of trans black people are in jail. You know, so many trans women I know are doing sex work, especially, and then you get into the idea of passing privilege. It's like, okay, yeah, it's great if you're white and middle class and people read you as a woman. But, like, if you're outside of those boundaries and people look at you and, like, say, oh, no, you're a trans, you're not a woman kind of thing, it's like, you can forget about finding work unless you're in a solid kind of job or whatever. It's like, I dropped out of high school because I was bullied so badly for wearing makeup and nail polish and having hair in high school. I've struggled immensely. You know, when I came out as trans, I used to have a successful wedding photography business. And quite frankly, these days, I don't have an income, and I'm at a point where I'm considering doing sex work, or at least camera work, because I don't know how else to make a living. No one will hire me. People have tried to sue me for fraud, that sort of stuff. So there's definitely this huge gap, and there's a lot of things that I talk about on Twitter, and I get zero response, and I find that really frustrating. Because I try and talk about passing privilege. I try and talk about class privilege. Because you know what? Like, at the end of the day, if you're a trans woman and you don't have a good job or you don't have savings, how are you supposed to afford transition? How are you supposed to afford removing your facial hair? How are you supposed to afford all these things? And society keeps pushing you down, refuses to hire you, that sort of stuff. It's this constant repression. But what we hear in the media constantly is these stories of, say, white trans women with obviously financial means, because they can afford to transition, they can afford to remove their hair, or they have parents that support them. And that's just so not the common case. It's like, my family didn't disown me, but you know what? Like, I got an eviction order last week. I'm facing homelessness by January, and neither of my brothers or my parents have offered me a place to stay. Or, for example, when I talked about being assaulted, and a man attacked me on the streets. I heard my family found out about this, but they never once mentioned it to me. So here I am, a woman, a trans woman, who was attacked by a man on the street, and my family wouldn't even acknowledge it. And obviously that really hurt. And there's this total erasure of my identity, because at the end of the day, it's like, well, no, you don't see me as a woman. You see me as some man who got in a fist fight. I'm not respecting or understanding that this is really upsetting, that as a woman, I was physically assaulted on a street, and they don't seem to care. So I don't mean to make it about me, but what I'm trying to say is that sorry, I'm getting a little aggravated when I talk about this. I just find the situation so frustrating. It's like, when we talk about trans stories, it's too often focused on white, rich, binary people who pass as cis people, and so many stories are being untold, unheard, unknowed. Even like I say, when white trans people talk about how they're scared of being murdered, it's like, no, like, chances are if you're white and trans, you're not going to be murdered. It's women of color who are being murdered. Like 90% at least of murdered trans women in the past year have been women of color, most often in Latin America. So there's a lot of appropriation going on. Okay, sorry, I get a little frustrated sometimes with talking about this because a lot of emotions come up, obviously. Very in the community, and I've lost a lot of friends to transphobia, to suicide, to violence, that sort of stuff. As far as words of encouragement go, I think it's just so important that we live our lives true, we live our lives authentic. We really have to ignore the prejudice of society, and, like, I feel I know it's hard to say, okay, well, I'm going to come out as trans and I'm just going to ignore all this stuff, because quite frankly, sometimes it's dangerous. And a lot of people just go stealth and hide that they're trans. But it's so imperative that we live our lives with honesty and integrity so that we can kind of forge a path for people before us. And like I said earlier, and talked to Sylvia Rivera and Miss Major, is that these women were trans way before hormones were available, before surgery was available, before social acceptance was available. And the rights that I have today and the liberties that I have today are based on the shoulders of these women who came out before me in the 60s and 70s and 80s, when it was a horrendous time to come out as trans. But they did it anyways, and they showed bravery, they showed courage, and I have what I have today because they did. So I absolutely think it's imperative that we are upfront, we are honest, that we live our lives with truth, integrity, and then we just tell the world, hey, I'm this, this is how I identify, and this is who I am.
Okay. You've been listening to Sophia representing Toronto, Canada, giving us her thoughts on life and, you know, how, you know, varied and diverse it really can be and how we need to think about other people other than ourselves. You know, thank you for being on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. It was a real pleasure to talk to you.
That's it, everyone. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Please stay tuned.
The charge was brought against me in 1943, I think.
And not only because of that speech, but because of testimony by your friends and people who knew you were found innocent. The charge was thrown out of court.
Yes.
Although many years before that, 14 years before that, you had in fact been a male prostitute.
Yes, indeed.
And you say in your book, and the film makes very clear, that is the time when you found out, I think your words are, there are others like me.
Yes.
How did that come about?
Well, of course, in those days, many people denied that homosexuality existed at all. And I certainly never saw anyone who confessed being homosexual or even heard about them in my own life. So I only saw the boys in the middle of London who were also made up and looked effeminate, and therefore I assumed that all homosexuals were like myself, which of course I now know not to be so.
Like yourself in what way?
That they were all effeminate, and that they all lived in this sort of dream world in which they were made up and bejeweled and lived this exotic life, either in fact or in their hearts.
The film portrays very movingly that effeminate public effeminacy that you displayed. I find it much lessened from the film now. Is that because the film was a caricature or you've mellowed?
Oh, yes. I couldn't carry on in quite the same way now. I think it would be unsuitable.
Why?
Because of my age. I mean, when you're young, you can wear as much makeup as you like, and what you can't wear, you can carry. But it wouldn't be suitable now. I must try and be a more moderate person.
It portrays that effeminacy, but it also makes it very clear that you had no desire to be a woman. You were not.
Well, I suppose when I was a child, when I lived almost entirely in a dream world, I suppose I thought of myself as a woman. But later on, you realize you have to live in the real world and that you are not a woman. You are only in some senses effeminate or feminine, and that you must make this compromise. You must learn to live in a world where statistically you are a man, whatever you may think about yourself.
If you did not want to become a woman, what did you want to become?
I didn't want to become anything. Once I'd accepted the world, all I wanted was that the world should understand what kind of person I was, so that there would be no misunderstanding, so that I would never be offered friendship or hospitality or even employment on anything that could be called a misunderstanding.
Deliberately laid it out as far as
I laid it out so that everyone would know what they were getting.
What about the public, the so-called normal person who would pass you on the street? You write about that.
Yes, they were extremely hostile. And I think it's because they saw that my difference from the rest of the world was sexual. And in England, sex is not popular.
Sex of any kind?
Not of any kind. No display of sex, no talk about sex was popular until the permissive society began.
People kept suggesting that you would go to, for example, Paris or some continental. I did not read any references about coming to Toronto during the 1930s when this was going on. But you said, no, you're going to stay home and do this in London.
Oh, yes. There's no good doing it in Paris. If it causes no stir, then it covers no ground.
You wanted to cover as much stir as to create as much stir as you could.
I wanted to survive the stir. The idea was not to create it, but to outlive it, to show that people like me had to go on living, that they had to take their laundry to the laundry, they had to eat their meals in restaurants, they had to go to work, they had to come back. This is what people had to learn.
And that was your crusade?
In a kind of a way, yeah.
You say you threw off some of the, I can't quote you precisely by heart, threw off some of the sorrow of homosexuality by turning it into a crusade.
Yes, this is true. It made me less alone to feel that I was united with other homosexuals in this respect.
One of the segments of society from which you were very strongly excluded was I don't know how to phrase this exactly, but gay society as it was then recognized, the underground.
It did worry.
People looked straight.
Yes, it worried the people who had anything to lose. It didn't worry the other boys in the West End. They were as badly off as I was. But the middle classes, who felt if it all gets talked about, if everyone can take into their consideration that somebody is homosexual, we shall all be under suspicion. And this is what they didn't want.
In the film, you were thrown out of a gay club.
This often happened because they feared they were drinking clubs and they feared to lose their license.
What do you feel now about the gay liberation movement when people come out not in the way that you did, but publicly announce their homosexuality, whether or not they signal it with makeup and dyed hair and so on?
I think it's all a good thing because the more that people get used to the idea that homosexuals are among them, that they are here, the better, because the great weapon is boredom. Once the public gets bored with homosexuality, then freedom will be here.
How does the gay liberation movement look on you, as a patron saint or as a man ahead of his time?
Well, they worry because they keep on thinking that I was once militant and that I am no longer so. This, of course, is not true. In the film, in any part of the film that you see someone totally acquiescent. You see someone who throughout the movie says, very well, whatever you like, whatever you say. And this is the way that I've lived. I mean, I was so totally acquiescent that I've sat on buses and people have moved away from me. And I've said, if you like, I will get out at the next stop. But you must learn that even people like me cannot walk everywhere. You can't be more acquiescent than that.
But acquiescence and your determination to flaunt yourself publicly in every way don't seem quite to jive. You know what I mean?
I wanted to be recognized for what I was. And I wanted people to understand that though I said I was different, I didn't say I was better.
In fact, you say in the book that you look on heterosexuals as superior.
Oh, yes, because they rule the world.
So you don't wish you were a heterosexual, or do you?
I don't think it's possible to answer that question. It's like asking me if I would like to be dead. I've no idea what it would be like.
Do you think you were a person just way ahead of his time or in the wrong geographical place? Or what caused
Not really.
The sensation that you became?
Oh, I think the sensation was caused which would not be caused now, and it was caused in London and would not be, perhaps be caused in Paris, as you're saying. But I think that somebody had to make a statement of some kind so that ultimately other people could make a further.
You've got to conform to the society in which you live. You've got to live within it or outside of it. You can't straddle a fence. Now, are you going to live outside of the American culture, or are you going to live within it as long as you stay in America? You've got to conform. What else can you do?
Hi, I'm Buffy St. Marie. We have overcome many obstacles in our history as Aboriginal people. We've survived. Today, we must work together, become leaders in the fight to stop the spread of HIV/AIDS in our communities. We have to think about the 7 generations ahead of us. It's a matter of survival.
Radio Insurgente, la voz de los sin voz.
Vamos, 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 vamos adelante, para que salgamos en la lucha avante, porque nuestra patria grita y necesita de todo el esfuerzo de los zapatistas.
Transmitiendo desde algún lugar de las montañas del sureste mexicano, en la frecuencia 97.9 en FM.
This is the horn, I'm Bob Kincaid. Head on radionetwork.com, an internet-based conversation radio experiment. Available most easily at headonradionetwork.com. There's a listen live button. Just jump right on it, and there you are. Or if you're on a mobile device, it's also easy to find us at TuneIn Radio, a nice app for your mobile smartphone, or TuneIn Internet Radio, or Dar.fm, or Stitcher Radio, Streama.com. We are rather ubiquitous. I mean, if we got more every night, we'd be paying salaries, right? Head on radionetwork.com.
Go on, chillin'. That's what we're talking about. We need a little help. Can't do this y'all alone. Thank God for this. Lick. Jim Brown, y'all. Yes, this your evening. One more time. We're the Axe Hunter Chillin' for Get Up. Get into it. Get involved. Oh, Hunter Chillin, when I have to come down here to the Gullah Geechee Nation, and so glad that Hunter to tune in to we Gullah Geechee Rhythm Radio Station. Hunter Chillin, no, this year the head from the body of this year nation and the horse of we station. Queen Quest, come on, Chillin, get involved, get involved, get involved to the Gullah Geechee Sea Island Coalition, the sponsor of this year radio station. Hunter Chillin, this year the we show, Gullah Geechee Rhythm Radio. Come on, y'all.
There are many arguments against the death penalty. It's not a deterrent against the crimes that it punishes. Society who use the death penalty don't have lower crime rates than those that do. When a country abolishes the death penalty, they are not plunged into criminal chaos. But even if the death penalty did reduce crime rates, would it then be acceptable? The death penalty targets the economically disadvantaged, those who can't afford good legal counsel, those without a voice in society. There's a saying in the US, capital punishment means that those without the capital get the punishment. Statistics show this is true. But would it be acceptable if people from all sections of society were executed? Does killing a rich man make killing a poor man right? The death penalty is irreversible and results in the death of innocence. When someone is dead, a retrospective pardon is of little use to them or their family. Since 1990, in China, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Nigeria, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, Yemen, and the USA, there have been 51 recorded executions of child offenders, some as young as 14 years old. But even if no more innocents or children are killed, should we tolerate the death penalty? The death penalty is never acceptable. It abuses two of our most basic human rights. Everyone has the right to live, and no one shall be subject to torture. The death penalty obviously kills people, but it also tortures, physically by the brutal nature of execution, and psychologically by forcing individuals to wait to be killed. They wait, sometimes for decades, while others are led to their deaths. The horror of this waiting is unimaginable. Human rights are thus called because they apply to all human beings. They belong to all of us equally. An attack on these fundamental rights anywhere is an attack against all of us. The right to life is inalienable. It cannot be given and it cannot be taken away. No matter how terrible the crime, in a world full of uncertainty, human rights are a clearly drawn line, a line between what is right and what is wrong, the line between imprisonment and execution. Every individual facing the death penalty is, whatever they stand accused of, still a human being. However much we revile them, however much we are outraged by their actions, however much we want revenge, they are still human beings. They may well have killed and tortured. They've crossed the line. But do we really want to join them?
I'm Cory Doctorow, and you're listening to a Creative Commons licensed podcast, Some Rights Reserved.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This ends our newsflash.
Storing every little file. Make a promise and take a while. Hooked up to a satellite. Make sure the world's behaving right. I don't mean to bust your groove. Think it's time we made a move. Freedom isn't free tonight. Freedom isn't free tonight. Was indoctrinated here. Constitution, Paul Revere. And I'm not trying to be disloyal, but I ain't dying for your oil. And there's a camera on the bus. Are you with them? Are you with us? Surveillance at the traffic light, every friggin' megabyte. Freedom isn't free tonight. Freedom isn't free tonight. Freedom isn't free tonight. They're coming for me now.